You've heard about the idea of a three-legged stool for the financial side of retirement. But our guest today thinks it's wise to bring a second three-legged stool to your retirement for the other side of the equation, your life. I'm Joe Casey, and you're listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. And our guest today is the author of the new book, The Inspired Retirement, Purpose and Passion in Your Next Adventure. Natalie Martin is a chaired professor at the University of New Mexico School of Law, where she teaches mindfulness and law, as well as elder law, commercial law, and consumer law. A longtime yoga and meditation teacher and practitioner, she also teaches contemplative practices in varied settings, from hospitals and senior centers to law school classrooms. She's the author of over 40 articles and 9 books, including Lawyering from the Inside Out and Yoga for Lawyers. And her legal scholarship has been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court. With her new book, The Inspired Retirement, she brings her decades of experience and expertise to a general audience. If you're curious about what a life outside of the fast lane and what a meaningful and joyful retirement may look like for you, stay tuned. Natalie, thanks for making time for us today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Joe. Thank you.
So let's start at the beginning. Tell us about the three plagues and how the three-legged stool of the inspired retirement addresses them.
Sure. So the three plagues of aging are from Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal, which is an amazing book, by the way. And what they are is boredom, loneliness, and dependence. So these are three things that often accompany aging. Again, boredom, loneliness, and dependence, but they don't have to. And so a lot of my book is about fighting these plagues in various ways. And I do, you ask also about the three-legged stool. And this is just my riff on, you know, we all know about the three-legged stool of financial planning, right? So we've got our Social Security and our private savings, and some people are lucky enough to have pensions. And so those are the three legs of the financial stool. But so my take on this is that on the non-financial side, we have three interrelated legs. And my legs for the non-financial side are purpose, number one, and then number two, mental, physical, and spiritual well-being. And then finally, joy, which is sort of like mindset, which I know a lot of your guests have talked about. So these are basically the organizing principles of my book, and it does focus a lot on purpose, but there are things in there about the other two as well, well-being and joy. If I could just say a few more words, a little bit more detail about how you fight these plagues. I loved it when Richard Sheffield, a prior guest of yours, said that when you start to have more time in retirement, you know, take that first time to take care of your body. I think he even said, this is your new job. And this will take care of this problem of physical dependence, right? So we all get a little bit, you know, more or less physically well as we age. I have a chapter on that, chapter 7. It's called Coming to Terms with the Older Body. Pretty hard to do. But I think taking care of the body is really important. And then, of course, the other two, boredom. You've already talked to so many people about trying new things, being a beginner, maybe returning to something that you loved when you were younger. That's a great way to fight boredom. And then loneliness. I can think of maybe the Arthur Brooks podcast, but there were many other people who said that probably the main thing that determines how happy you're going to be in retirement is the quality of your personal relationships. And so I don't think it has to be an army. I myself am sort of an introvert, and I just have a few really close friends, and that's enough to sustain me. I mentioned one other thing. I know your guests have heard about this idea of having a positive mindset. So I'll just overlay it with that. I mean, the science shows that that can add 7.5 years to your life. And so these, I think, are some of the defining principles around my book.
Fundamentals matter, and that really sets a good foundation. But tell me a little bit more about joy, because I think that's one that can be often overlooked in retirement.
Yeah, I think you're right. And my book actually starts there. And I even quote Dr. Seuss that it's fun to have fun, but you have to know how. And so we really do have to return to that childlike state when we can remember what it felt like not to have a lot of obligations. So that's what I think of joy as, and also the mindset issue that we talked about, Joe, that it's so important not to assume that from here on out, it's just downhill. And that can add years to our lives.
You've interviewed a diverse group of retirees, everyone from a police officer and a waitress to a doctor and a university president. What did you learn from them?
Yeah, so my interviews were really open-ended. That's a research term for faculty members like me. But my main takeaway is that everybody is so different. You know, for some people, it is, you know, forming the big nonprofit or working on a big homelessness project or something, but it doesn't have to be that big. I mean, I interviewed a woman who just had a lot of people in her life that needed things. And, you know, she was not a professional. She was actually a waitress. And she said, I finally have time and a little bit more money to help the people in my life that really need it. That made a huge difference to her and it made a huge difference to them. So big takeaway, there is no one size fits all. You don't have to volunteer. You know, for example, I know someone that has a lot of physical challenges and it's fine to dedicate your life to just working on becoming physically well and physically strong. You know, you don't have to work at a food bank. You know, maybe you love your grandkids. That's great too. Hold your head up high. You don't have to be a docent. You don't have to provide free legal services if you're a lawyer. Totally up to you. But when we get into the contemplative work, the reason why that matters so much is you've got to know what to pick, you know, so you have to kind of create that space for yourself.
You have a lot of great stories in the book. What's one retirement reinvention story you could share?
Sure. And I would love to share them all, but in the interest of time, I think I'm going to pick what I call the paper chain lady. So a woman who was working as a high-level administrator for a school district. And she was so excited about her retirement. She made this huge paper chain. So it was going to be 24 months away, 2 years. She had 24 sort of links in her chain. And every month she made a big celebration about cutting one of the chains. And other people in her office participated. She got all the way down to the last one and cut it. And there was lots of brouhaha, big, huge party. And to her surprise, the next day, I mean, this isn't like a year later or anything. The next day, she woke up and just said, what have I done? You know, I don't think she realized how many contacts she had at work that were important to her and spent 2 years flailing around trying all sorts of things that didn't suit her. And what I love about her story is that if she had had the opportunity to think about this before the big day, then she could have saved herself, you know, a lot of emotional sort of turmoil.
So let's say two of my neighbors are retired. I can only think of one, actually. But let's pretend there are two. And one seems to be struggling in the transition to retirement, but the other has read your book and is embracing the inspired retirement. What would I notice is different about them?
Well, this one really had to make me laugh because I think I have these neighbors. I have wonderful neighbors and we're the youngest of the group. So I see a lot of retirees, but, you know, let's start with the one that's living the dream and just, you know, what would we just physically see? I think that one is smiling and has a very open posture. So, you know, the heart is open. He, she, or they are ready to see what might be coming that day, what they might encounter. Open to all the possibilities. What I love about the question, Joe, is I think you can see this in the body. You can actually see this. Now, this one might be more physically active, but not necessarily. There are plenty of people that are not so active, but are still very, very well and happy. I think this one would also be more likely to say yes to anything that you would propose to do. And they probably have a busier social calendar, so you see them coming in and out more, getting in the car, getting on their bicycle, or going for a walk with someone. And they're revved up about the things they do, happy to talk about it. Probably the thing I really appreciate, though, is that they listen more. So they're more interested and truly open to conversation with other people. Now, switching to the other one, and I'm not sure I would look that hard, we have the one that is not living the dream. I mean, this person isn't going to look unhappy. It'll just be sort of a neutral look, I think. But they'll be often afraid to really sign up to do anything. Because, you know, something bad might happen and then they'd have to cancel. So I think in their minds, it's better to just live things open in contemplation of these things that could stop them. The mindset about the aging, I think, for the person who's struggling is a really fixed mindset. So not a growth mindset. And yes, it feels like it's all downhill from there. And maybe the person isn't feeling that well, you know, physically or mentally. And if that is the case, that might be the main thing that they want to talk about, is just the failures of the body and so on. And I'll leave it at that, but I could go on and on.
Yes, we've all had these conversations where you ask someone how they're doing and they actually tell you in great detail.
What I think is really kind of hard is when we're in that state, you know, where everything's bad, it's very hard to listen to other people. So I recently had a death, and this is one of the emotions that as older people, we have to deal with all the time, but it was a tough one. It wasn't an older person. And I think the neighbor would say, "I'm so sorry for your loss," and then dive right into the organ recital, you know, what's wrong with all the organs, you know, without really engaging any sort of give and take. Yeah.
So one of the things that I especially like about the Inspired Retirement book is the doable practices that you encourage people to explore. Things like reflection, contemplation, mindfulness, movement, and yoga, just to name a few of them. Can you tell us about the role some of these play in your life?
Sure. And I'm going to start by just telling you what the science says are the primary benefits of these practices. I mean, the first thing is reducing stress. That's kind of the entry point for most people. It does calm us, but it also improves brain function. So reduces stress, improves the brain. Second one, increases productivity. So you can get more work done in less time. And who doesn't want that? And then finally, it helps us learn more about ourselves and as a result, find more meaning and purpose in our lives. And I've benefited from all of these things. I am very type A by nature and have really learned the hard way that you can miss a lot of stuff when all you do is work. And it's my nature to just drive towards my goals, you know, whatever else I'm leaving behind in my life. I first discovered this stuff when I was working 60 hours a week, had to be available all the time. I was really looking for relief, Joe. I mean, I just felt like something had to change, like a lot of other lawyers and other professionals who just work all the time. So these practices literally changed my life. I mean, they even helped me change my professional life to something that was more suited to what really was important to me. And it's just been amazing. I do teach this stuff to very conventional audiences. So if you have some listeners that just want to toe dip and are thinking, "Oh, this sounds a little bit hippie, but you know, maybe I could try a little bit of it." I'm sure there's my book, but there are also the mindfulness apps, which I think are great. And my favorite tip on this is start moving slowly. Start doing things that are not completely just sedentary. Maybe you try yoga. Maybe you go for slow walks. I mean, all of those things can be a really nice entry point into this idea of grounding and becoming more aware of our own sort of beings, our unique selves.
So you mentioned the sedentary part, and you really cover that in the book as a big risk. And more movement and other things. Any comments on how to avoid drifting into a more sedentary lifestyle after work?
I think it is so important to just do it even though you don't want to. And there's a part in the book where it talks about how do you know if you really can't and you just don't feel like it? And I too sometimes can be very lazy physically. You know, I love, you know, brainy stuff. But I think you just have to do it. One of my favorite things is to get to do it first. I call that the up and out. And it means no coffee or anything. You just out the door and you're walking or doing whatever you need to do. So that would be my tip. Just try to do a little more every day. It's never too late. I have a great story in the book about this guy that took up, you know, weightlifting at age 70. You can do it.
Up and out. That's a good one. That's definitely a keeper. So if someone wanted to start with some of these things like mindfulness, as you mentioned, like yoga, how could they start? What would be some of your advice on starting something like that? That could be ultimately a big undertaking, but how do you break it down and start small?
Yeah, I mean, I like to go for a mindful walk. So this would be one where you're not listening to Joe's podcast. You're just walking and maybe repeating a phrase to yourself, you know, trying to get your steps up. Not looking at your phone until you get home to see how many steps you have. And then after you've done that mindful walk and really cleared the mind, I mean, clearing the mind early in the day means more productivity later, then go walking and listen to the podcasts, listen to all of them, and just keep the body moving. For yoga, let's go to a studio and try somebody's class. Ask about classes that are intro and level one and see if you like the teacher. You know, you can shop around a little bit, but I love yoga and I think it's fabulous for aging.
So don't jump into the hot yoga advanced class right away.
Hurt yourself and then assume I can't do this. Yeah, don't do that.
Did you mention the walking, the mindful walking? I do listen to a lot of podcasts when I do walk, but what I haven't, and I observe that I notice things, even though I've walked the same route for many, many, many days, I'll notice things that I can't believe I didn't observe before.
Yeah, and it's actually a practice, what you're talking about. So it's an observing practice where you're just going along and looking, maybe noticing things close up and then far away.
Sometimes it hits you all of a sudden. You're working hard and you're building a successful career. But then you start to wonder, what's next? If that's you, consider the Designing Your New Life in Retirement program. It's a coaching program that helps people who are ready to graduate from full-time work create a roadmap for a meaningful post-career life. We use the tools and the framework created by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans at Stanford to help you explore, experiment, and design your next chapter with purpose and clarity. So is it time for you to take some time to invest in your future? Consider joining our small group for 90 minutes on 6 Fridays, beginning on October 3rd. You'll find the link in the show notes where you can learn more and register. So sign up today and take the first step toward designing your future.
It's a wonderful practice. You can also listen for things that you hear. I'm a big birder, so you know, I'm always into the birds. But yeah, wonderful.
So in your book, you take on the emotional challenges that can arise in retirement. Can you share your thoughts on dealing with negative emotions?
Yes. I guess my main thought is that it is worth it because you might be able to avoid some regrets that you would otherwise have for the rest of your life. So in my interviews, and this is a chapter that I really would have preferred maybe not to even write, but this is a problem that we have a lot of people in our lives that we love very much and we may not be telling them that. And then it becomes too late. And a lot of people in my interviews said, you know, what I regret is what I didn't say and what I didn't do. The thing is, though, this is hard work. And so one of the ways that we connect with this is by, again, becoming contemplative and then being willing to deal with what comes up. You might need professional help. But some of the things for sure that I know in my own life is, how did you handle your own parents' death? Were you not there when you could have been? You know, those sorts of things. You know, talking about those and really coming to terms with those thoughts can be really, really helpful. I'm not going to say, though, Joe, that it's easy. And it always makes me laugh when people say, oh, the mindfulness stuff, that's just an escape from reality. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, you're going to be seeing reality in a very big way when you finally do slow down and look at what's inside. So I guess I would just say it's worth it. You can avoid regret later. And, you know, let's face it, it always feels good to improve the lives of others. So scary, maybe your family doesn't talk about love, but, you know, take a chance. You're probably going to really make someone's day and be more present and comfortable and happy yourself.
So what's one misconception about retirement that even savvy, well-informed people fall for? And what's your argument against?
Yeah, well, you of all people know the main one, which is just focusing on the money. But I think also just assuming that it's going to be loads and loads of fun, you know, without really planning and thinking about how your daily life is going to be. This is not just flipping a switch. It's not like, okay, now work, 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 work. And now play, 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 play. It does not work that way for most people. So it's worth it to try to get in there and figure out, what will my day look like? What would I love to do? And I think the other big thing has been mentioned, but not really realizing quite how much social life is sort of tied to your work. So before quitting, trying to get out there and become part of the communities that you will be in when you're retired.
That's a great point, because people can start to do some of those things early before they could leave, much, much easier.
Yeah. And on that note, if I could just add something, people say, oh, I don't have time, Natalie. I'm working 60 hours. well, maybe you don't have to work 60 hours. I mean, at the end, it could well be that you've got enough domain knowledge and enough experience to be work a little less. And it's okay. I don't think anyone's going to notice, and you've earned it.
I've heard a number of people talk about that as a regret, that they were continuing to go all out in, you know, that last year or so. And they wish they spent more time on them and doing the things that help prepare them. So I think that's a great point. So a key part of your book focuses on setting retirement objectives. And I know when I talk about goals on this podcast in retirement, people say, wait a minute, I thought we were talking about retirement. I left the goals back at the office. Could you share what that process was like for you and what you came up with?
I would love to. And this, I think, is kind of probably the most important part of the book. I mean, there's a lot of other parts, but there's this wonderful UCLA economist. His name is Shlomo Ben-Artzi. And about a decade ago, he published a book called Thinking Smarter. And, you know, like the two of us, I mean, he's worked in the financial world mostly, so he's a behavioral economist. But his idea in his book, and I have a pretty good, I think it's really a good description of it in my book, is that you should set some very broad objectives for your retirement. And so this really doesn't have a whole lot to do with money. I mean, it's things like, okay, do I prioritize staying in my own home for the rest of my life? Do I prioritize family and friends? And you're going to take a long list and try to get it down to 9, which is very hard to do. The harder part still, though, is once you've picked the 9, and I know they're all near and dear to your heart, you're going to have to prioritize them. And the way that I propose doing it, and I think he does as well, is 3 top ones, 3 middle ones, and 3 low ones, which are still not that low. I did this with my faculty when I did a book talk, and this really got them going. It's really, really hard to do. And my husband and I've been married almost 40 years. We did it together. And it was at the time when we were considering one of those 10-pay, like, long-term care policies and trying to figure out where we would be living and all of this sort of stuff. But I'm going to tell you what we came up with, but you do have to prioritize. I mean, if you don't do the prioritizing, it doesn't work, because what you're going to find is that some of them are in conflict with one another. So after we did this for a while, Stuart and I came up with these. I won't read them all because I know we're a little bit short on time, but I start with his in the book because I think it's fun to do his. But he has those as his top 3: enjoy joint activities with Natalie, 2, work on overall health and fitness, and then 3, volunteer, work when I want to, where I want to. So this is the concept of you pick, you know, this work freedom idea. And then after that, spend time with family and friends. And I won't read the rest of them, but it's just sort of funny that he said, how can I prioritize like working on my health over my family and friends? But that's what you have to do. And then for mine, this is the crazy one, is that my very top one, this took a few hours, is be physically healthy enough to be independent. I mean, if that's really my number one goal, I should be spending a lot more time on this, Joe. That's for sure. But then live in the present moment with Stuart. You can tell there's 2 in there, really. Didn't want to narrow it down to 3. And then always have a dog. Now, always have a dog beat out, live in my own home. Isn't that crazy? And then
wow,
beat out working. I mean, I work. So very fascinating type of process that I hope people will engage in.
So first of all, I appreciate you answering in the way where you included your husband's as well, because for a lot of people, that combination is key to view it, not just as an individual, but as a couple as well. I now have more questions. And first one is, tell us about your dog.
Oh yeah, we have a little rescue dog named Stormy. But my book is all about Mijita, which in New Mexican Spanish means like the precious youngest daughter. And she passed away after the book came out. But, you know, I just have to have a dog. And in the context of those policies that we were talking about, I was thinking about, do I really want to put all this money into having $8,000 worth of care in a nursing home where I wouldn't be able to have my dog? I mean, my dog is, other than Stuart, of course, is just everything to me. And we like to get the older ones. Like this new one is 8 and Mijita was 10. And they're all border collie mixes of various genres. Yeah. Do you have a dog, Joe?
We do. My wife raises Seeing Eye Dogs for an organization in New Jersey called Seeing Eye Guide Dogs. And she's done, I think, 10. She's trained 10. And we have one that didn't make the final cut. They go to the
musician for a year afterwards. And our oldest daughter has a dog, and our second oldest daughter, who lives in Philadelphia, just got a dog literally this week. And we had a group chat last night suggesting all kinds of dog names, because the actual name of the dog, someone had it for a short period of time, is, so I think it's something like Chocolate Milkshake. And so we're having a discussion about the alternative names.
That's one thing about the older ones. Like, I don't really like the name Stormy, and it's a boy also, you know, so I'm like, eh. But at age 8, it seems a little late to be changing his name.
Turned out to be Chocolate Chip Milkshake. And so I think the going forward name is going to be Chip, was the way it turned out. I was trying to monitor the group chat and watch the Red Sox at the same time. So thanks for sharing the retirement objectives. Any advice for people who do that exercise? Because that's a great point you made about prioritizing. And I'm sure, as you mentioned, without that, it's not really key. Any advice for people who take that on how to really get the most out of an exercise like that?
Well, I would take your time for one thing. And you want to take a look at the very long list. I think I have a very long list in my book. And you can make your own list as well. But make it really, really big first, and then start the whittling down process. That part usually isn't so hard. The part that gets people really going is trying to prioritize. The reason it matters is, I mean, let's just say travel, you know, was the number one. I mean, that would conflict with having a dog, or that might conflict with, there are some financial concerns, right? Some things are cheaper than others. I mean, hiking is cheaper than golf. I mean, you do want to try to make the things be somewhat internally consistent, which is really hard to do. I mean, I'm looking at some of the ones that I didn't say, live in my own home, work on my own terms. That was in my middle category, which I thought would have been number one. This is why I say, take your time, write and share my writing, you know, engage in self-improvement, spend time with family and friends. Oh my God, that's like number 9, you know, for me. So just keep moving them around. If you have a partner or a spouse, it really does make sense to try to do this together, but separate first and then together. And trust me, as hard as it is, you will have so much fun doing this. I think if we did it again today, it would be fun to see if it was different. Like, don't look at it and just see if it changes. But it's a really fun process. You will enjoy it.
So I know you can relate to my last question, because you lived in this part of the country years ago. But here in the Northeast, it's a time of year where we see airplanes flying near the beach with signs focused on this captive audience of beachgoers. If you could put a message on one of those for people planning to retire, what would it be?
Okay, so I would want the word retirement to be in there, of course. And I would also want to somehow express this idea of contemplative practices in order to live your absolute best life, what you have left of it. And so here's what I came up with. And this is actually one of the slogans for my book anyway. I don't know. I bet you're going to tell me this is too long, but retiring soon, ? Step out of the fast lane and into the vast lane.
That's great. The vast lane. That's a keeper. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I really, really enjoyed the opportunity to read your book. And just a lot of very practical and inspired advice in there for all.
Thank you so much, Joe. This has been so much fun.
Thanks, Natalie.
This podcast isn't just about theory. It's really about practice. So here's our takeaway segment with a few actionable ideas to consider following today's podcast conversation with Natalie Martin. Number one, don't just focus on your retirement party. Plan your transition. I know it's very tempting to focus on the countdown, counting down the days until your last day of office and your first day of freedom. But I hope you'll remember Natalie's story of the woman with the paper chain and the position she put herself in when that last day arrived, and the following day was not what she was prepared for. So do some planning, own your future. Number two, is it time for a mindfulness and movement practice? Why not start small this week and get on board with mindfulness? She shared a lot of great practical small steps we can all take to get started. An example I like is the mindfulness walk, because it's a 2-for-1. Take a walk without listening to anything and see what you notice. Observe what's going on with you internally, but also what's going on around you. If you're like me, you'll be amazed at what you notice. And why not try combining this idea of mindfulness walk with her other idea of up and out? Number three, what are your goals for retirement and what are your priorities? So take her up on this retirement objectives exercise. Brainstorm a list of what you want from retirement beyond the financial side. Include everything from the categories that matter to you, starting with health and wellness, going through relationships and other outside interests you might want to pursue. Come up with a longer list, and then as she suggests, narrow it down to 9, and then break it into 3 prioritized tiers. Do it separately, but if you have a spouse or a significant other, share it with them and compare notes. You'll be glad that you took the time to write it down on paper and go through that prioritizing process. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. My mission is to help you retire smarter by looking at both sides of the retirement equation. And our focus is on the non-financial side and living the life that you want to create. You can easily browse all of our episodes and great conversations like this one at our website, retirementwisdom.com. You'll find all of our episodes across 8 seasons. You can scan them quickly for particular guests or more likely topics that we've covered. One listener called it a free retirement school.